Okay, friends, here we are. This is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 99. We have just finished a very important tabulation. Just refreshing your memory here. This is what it has looked like. And we've spent at least 3.5, 4 programs on it, because it detailed the ways in which different relationships between the signs of the zodiac revealed unsuspected understanding of these signs and their interplay. So now we are on page 334, and DK will say a little bit more about this, I think. Let me get this straight here. Yeah. Okay. You will note that these relationships between the signs are not those of the opposites, but of intermediate signs. Okay. Oh-ho. This is rather important. Pause here for a moment. So now we can go on. That was just a little loss of connectivity. You will note that these relationships between the signs are not those of the opposites, but of intermediate signs, not 180 degrees. There's not one angle there that's 180 degrees, although there are some squares. One sextile, a number of quincunxes, and a couple of trines. And therefore, marking the intermediate period of relationship and not a consummation, as is the case when such opposites as Leo and Aquarius or Cancer and Capricorn are considered. So these are pre-consummatory relationships here. These relationships, it will be found, create quite definite geometrical forms, just as the crosses. And I've been talking about the 150 degree angles, 60, 120, 90, and so forth. Let's see. I think there's even one semi-sextile between Cancer and Leo. So a semi-sextile, a sextile, the square, the trine, yes, and the inconjunct. These are, all of them, the conventional aspects as found between the actual opposition. So they create definite geometrical forms, just as the crosses formed between the opposites create the crosses in the heavens. And he's saying here, I commend this to your consideration. Perhaps the meaning of division by 12 for the semi-sextile, division by 6 for the sextile, division by 4 for the square, division by 3 for the trine, on the way up to division by 2, which is the consummatory opposition. The above tabulation gives you a new and inner relation of the signs to each other, and one which only becomes definitely active and effective after initiation. But now, what does he mean by initiation? It seems to me that by what is said, we're not speaking of the third initiation. When he says that, for instance, Aquarius releases Virgo from her load, well, perhaps eventually. Cancer visions life in Leo, that's not the third degree. Gemini moves towards Libra, that's not the third degree. So by initiation, in general here, we probably mean the first initiation, or once the initiatory process, has begun at the first degree. Because otherwise we would have a consummatory relationship, and we just don't have those. Perhaps when it says that Capricorn consummates the work of Scorpio. How does it say? Completes it, or Capricorn consummates the work of Scorpio. Then perhaps we are talking about the third degree, but we need not, because Capricorn and Scorpio are active at all the preceding degrees, first and second. So there can be lesser ways in which the summation found in Capricorn consummates the testing, trial, preparatory battles, and so forth, that are prepared and offered in Scorpio. Okay, it is consequently of small use to the average reader. Now, does that mean the average disciple? Who will be reading these books? Perhaps he means the aspirant. But notice how he says the word definitely active. In other words, it could be active to a certain extent before initiation. Suppose initiation were here to mean the third degree. Then we could say that while it is not definitely active, it is somewhat active even before the third degree. I'm sure we can all recognize, at least partially, how these could work out in the life of an individual prior to the third degree. Aries turns towards Capricorn. Okay, this covers a wide span. Even ambition can be somewhat consummated. But the definite relationship of this particular square is probably having something to do with the third degree. Taurus rushes blindly until Sagittarius directs. That seems before the third degree this will happen. And it will be a movement into greater light. Gemini moves towards Libra. It has to do with progressive soul infusion before the third degree also. Cancer visions life in Leo. It's pretty much the life of individualization or individuation carried on to a reasonable extent, so that you have the true individual produced who is self-aware and in control of his life. But this can also occur somewhat before the third degree. So what I'm saying here is that the word initiation probably refers to the general initiatory process which begins at the first degree. Leo seeks release in Scorpio. Yes, but that can happen even at the second degree as well as the third degree. And it can happen also in the suffering that can occur even before the fourth degree, before the first degree. Virgo hides the light which irradiates the world in Aquarius. Well, the hiding of the light is occurring well before the later degrees. Libra relates the two in Gemini. It's pretty much a replay of what we read before. It is part of the soul infusion process, which is fairly complete for all practical purposes at the third degree, but continues beyond it, but certainly is working well before the third degree. There are stages of soul infusion. Scorpio stages the release of Leo. Yes, I think we talked about that. And that will happen, well, that will happen at the first 3 degrees easily. Sagittarius, the disciple, becomes the savior in Pisces. That is post-third degree, to become a true savior, of course. Capricorn consummates the work of Scorpio, let us say, at the third degree, but it can be various kinds of consummation before that time. And maybe Pisces does take from all the signs persistently. Aquarius releases Virgo from her load, yes, as we approach the third degree. So there is no great consistency here. We cannot say that this statement about being definitely effective after initiation means the third degree. It can mean the third degree, or in some cases earlier. It is consequently of small use to the average reader, presumably not the dedicated disciplic reader, but the average reader, at this time, though it opens up, nevertheless, new astrological contacts and influences, most of which are established through ray influences and which require a grasp of individual evolutionary status for correct interpretation. Well, the whole premise of this tabulation is that we must understand where a person stands upon the path. If we have to understand how he or she receives and applies the zodiacal energies. Now, we are also learning something else, that most of the relationships here are established through ray influences. Maybe we can see whether we see this to be true or not. Aries and Capricorn have rays 1 and 7 in common. Taurus and Sagittarius have ray 4 in common, although Sagittarius has also ray 6 and ray 5. As things now stand, Gemini and Libra do not have rays in common, at least from the constellational point of view, Gemini ray 2, Libra ray 3, but if you look very, very closely, you'll see the mutability and activity of ray 3 in Gemini and the power of fusion and merging in Libra, signaling the second ray. Cancer and Leo have Gemini, they really don't have anything ray-wise in common, do they? Cancer has the third and the seventh ray constellationally. Leo has the first and the fifth. They can be related, of course, through Neptune, which is thoroughly the ruler in Cancer, the moon veiling even Neptune, we are really told, and the sun veiling Neptune esoterically. They can be related in that way. Leo seeks release in Scorpio, rays 1 and 5 versus ray 4. No, they are not in common, but Scorpio does have plenty of ray 1, being the Herculean cosmic decanate. When it comes to Virgo and Aquarius, we have rays 2 and 6 and ray 5, so there's not a ray connection there. Maybe DK is talking particularly about planetary ray connections. We can look at that as well. Libra and Gemini, we've already discussed. Scorpio and Leo, we've discussed. Capricorn and Scorpio, it's ray 1, 3, and 7 of Capricorn versus ray 4 of Scorpio. There is not a real connection there, though the influence of Mars is strong in both. Virgo and Aquarius, I think we already looked at that, and Pisces takes from all the signs. So from the constellational perspective, we don't find a lot of ray relations. DK says in most cases, he says here, the new astrological contacts, and they are constellational contacts, aren't they, are influences, most of which are established through the ray influences. He doesn't tell us whether it's the constellational rays or the rays which are coming through the planets, does he? He doesn't tell us that. But why don't we take a look again and see if we can see anything about rays coming through the planets. So if we go back up here to Aries, we have Mars, Mercury, and Uranus for Aries, and we have Saturn, Venus. Saturn, Venus, third ray and fifth ray, generally speaking, and sixth ray, fourth ray, and seventh ray. So we don't see there a ray relationship by the planets, but we have seen a constellational ray relationship between 1 and 7. When we look at Taurus, it has Venus and Vulcan, which is ray 5 and ray 1. And Sagittarius, ray 2 of Jupiter, ray 3 of the Earth, and ray 6 of Mars. So there's no direct relationship there, unless we look at the ray 1 of, the ray 1 of Vulcan. No. That won't work. Maybe I'm overlooking something here. But we do not see the connection. They have a constellational ray 4 in common. But it seems that one can understand something more about the relationship when you simply consider the nature of the signs. They are certainly both related to sight. When it comes to Gemini, let's see what we have in common. We have Mercury ray 4, Venus ray 5, Earth ray 3 for Gemini. And we have with Libra, Venus ray 5 and Saturn ray 3. Well, there are some ray relationships there between the planets, are there not? So we have Venus found esoterically in Gemini, bringing ray 5, and we have Venus and Libra ray 5. We also have Earth hierarchically for Gemini, ray 3, and we have Saturn as the hierarchical connection in Libra, also ray 3. So there are some points in common. Now, I don't know whether it's legitimate exactly to relate a planetary ray to a constellationally delivered ray. We could also look at it that way, and we could probably find points in common, but I think it would be difficult for us to interpret that mixture of levels. Certainly, let's just say with Gemini and the Earth, hierarchical, the third ray is presently coming through, and it would relate to the general third ray of constellational Libra. One could do that, of course. And is there anything else in Libra? No, it has no ray 2 or ray 4 to relate back to Gemini. All right, let's go on here. With Cancer, we definitely have Neptune involved, and there's a ray 6 there from the soul level for Cancer. And Sun veiling Neptune in Leo, that's also a ray 6. Nothing else, I think. We could say, you know, we could say, okay, the Sun veils Uranus in Leo, so that's ray 7, and it could be brought back to the constellational ray 7 of Cancer. But like I say, those are perhaps fairly tenuous relations, and we have no way to really confirm them. The Sun is the ruler of Leo, but it veils Uranus in the esoteric position, and so that would correlate with the Mars, ray 6, of Scorpio in the orthodox and in the esoteric position. Mercury is ray 3, and there's nothing there, Mercury is ray 4, and there's nothing there to correlate with anything in Leo. When we come to Virgo, well, okay, we do have a ray 4 connection via the Moon. The Moon is the esoteric ruler of Virgo, ray 4, and the hierarchical ruler of Aquarius. So, you know, is it a planetary connection we're looking at here, or a ray connection? Virgo also has a strong ray 4 of Mercury, and that will connect with Aquarius, with the Aquarius Moon, which has ray 4. From another perspective, the hierarchical ray 2 Jupiter of Virgo will connect with the Jupiter that rules esoterically in Aquarius, ray 2 and Jupiter. So there are connections there, but you know, you could probably find other signs in which ray 2 and ray 2 was prominent, or perhaps ray 4. So we can point out the connections, but what they mean exactly, I mean, I think we're on safer ground when we simply look at the relationship between the signs, and then we will understand something of why they are connected, you know. Both of these being air signs, both having a lot to do with relationship, one having more to do with the alternation of relationship and the understanding of the opposite, and the other having more to do, Libra that is, with the fusion of the opposites. When we come to Scorpio and Leo, well again, we've just looked at that. Ray 6 of Mars connects with the ray 6 of the veiled Neptune in Leo. I didn't say Libra, did I? I meant Leo if I had said Libra. With Sagittarius, well, here we have a definite ray 6, a ray 2 Jupiter connection. From another perspective, the ray 6 of Sagittarius constellationally is connected with the ray 6 of Pisces. That is very strong. There's nothing, the Earth is there. Mars will has Ray 6 for Sagittarius as the hierarchical ruler, and it will connect with the Ray 6 of Pisces constellationally, but it will also connect with Ray 6 of Neptune, which rules in a broad way the sign Pisces. So there is a Ray relationship there. When it comes to Capricorn and Scorpio, well, 137 for Capricorn and 4 for Scorpio, so it's not there. And Saturn and Venus are the rulers in Capricorn, and Mars and Pluto and Mercury in Scorpio. We won't find it there. We will find a relationship between exalted Mars from Capricorn and the orthodox and esoteric ruler Mars in Scorpio, uniting them via a Ray 6 stream. Is there anything else there? I think, unless I'm overlooking something, I think that's about it there. And then we already discussed Aquarius and Virgo in relation to the Moon and Mercury and the fourth ray and so forth, and Pisces, taking from all the signs, is in a unique position. So that's a quick run-through of what DK says when he says that most of the time these relationships are established through Ray influences. I would suggest that when you try to understand them, you study the relationships from the perspective of the meaning of the two signs and how they could be related in a way that promotes the evolutionary process, and then you can look at constellational Ray similarities, planetary similarities, and therefore Ray similarities, though you see, like in Virgo and Aquarius, we have a Ray similarity which is beyond simply planetary, because Mercury is Ray 4, Moon is Ray 4, and that is from Virgo, so there's a strong Ray 4 there, connected with the Ray 4 hierarchical Moon. So we have two Ray 4 influences connecting with a single Ray 4 influence, two in Virgo and one in Aquarius. So it's not always a one-to-one basis. Okay, and which require a grasp of individual evolutionary status for correct interpretation. So this is something that every esoteric astrologer must have. As an esoteric astrologer, just do this, esoteric astrologer, we must have a general grasp of the level of evolution of the individual with whom we are consulting. That goes without saying, and how can we do this? It's just really, isn't it? It's a question of experience, I suspect. We have to have enough experience with people and with the great teaching in general, so we know approximately where upon the path they stand. I mean, only a master, perhaps, or a high initiate is going to know exactly and what is exactly the next step ahead for people. But we can know something of it. We may be incorrect, but we may have a working hypothesis at least. So many of the people, for instance, that are, you know, interested in the Bailey books in an ongoing way have taken the first degree and are struggling somewhere between the first and the second degree. This seems to be a general category. It doesn't mean necessarily that every reader of the Bailey books has taken the first degree, but I'm talking about the ongoing student who is deriving real spiritual nourishment from the Bailey books and the Trans-Himalayan wisdom. In general, it's a long time between the first degree and the second degree, and it can involve quite a number of lives. No way to specify exactly how many, but probably no fewer than seven. Well, there is one strange quote which seems to suggest that you can take the second initiation in the next life, but everything else speaks about the length of time between these two initiations, and it is much longer than between any other two sequential initiations. It is essential for the right understanding that the astrologer knows whether his subject is relatively unevolved, and this assumes that the astrologer will be working with all kinds of individuals, although he did, you know, tell us that in general, astrologers would divide along two lines, one type that tend to work more with the planetary horoscope, or when I say that, I mean the horoscope which involves the planets and the personality and so forth, and the other tending to work more with those in whom the soul is beginning to express itself and who are on the reversing or reversed wheel. And you as an astrologer, a person interested in astrology, will see who you are working with and for. Oftentimes it's people of generally the same evolutionary status as oneself. One works with one's friends and those one attracts. If you're a teacher, maybe you will have some who have not yet accomplished what you have accomplished, but you still have to decide whether, you know, they are relatively unevolved or actually on the reversed wheel or are somehow reversing the wheel or, you know, going backwards, aren't even concerned with reversing the wheel because the life of the personality is quite enough for them. Really, when you think about it, there's not all that much difference between people. If you look from a great distance, all the apparent spaces between the stages of human development seem to collapse upon themselves, and people are really much closer to each other than, you know, one would ordinarily imagine if one gets too caught in the technicalities of distinct stages of evolution. So, you know, it would certainly have been possible for the Christ or the Buddha to say useful things to very unevolved individuals. I mean, look, you know, people are communicating meaningfully with different kingdoms, they're talking meaningfully and in an evolutionarily inspiring way, even to their pet, to their dog or cat or elephant or horse. They even talk to their plants. I mean, it is possible to communicate something of value to individuals or units of life which apparently are quite far from one's own evolutionary status. But as I say, if you really look at humanity from a distance, everything is really much closer than it would seem to be if you are looking only at the immediate foreground and are thinking about the differences between the stages of evolution among human beings. So anyway, it's essential for their right understanding of these new relationships, and try to keep them in your mind, try to memorize them, you know, try to memorize these 12, if it's possible, you know, that Aries turns towards Capricorn and that Taurus rushes blindly until Sagittarius directs, that kind of thing. Try to keep these in your mind so that when you work with people, they can form a kind of a resource for more delineated or sophisticated interpretation. I mean, probably most of the people you work with are going to be at a somewhat intermediate stage. And when you look at the huge, you know, space in a way between the first and second initiation, could be 20 lives, maybe in some cases 30 lives. The intermediate condition is the likely one. Perhaps sometimes you will actually work with people who are just on the eve of the meditation which lies before them, in which case, if you really understand that and the energies involved, you can be of a very great assistance, especially if you're not working with somebody who's taking a higher initiation than you are. Then maybe the assistance can be partial, but you will not necessarily understand the world into which they are entering. Okay, so is he relatively unevolved? Is he an advanced man? Now, here, this is advanced man, meaning kind of an intermediary stage, or whether he is upon one or other stages of the path. Now, what DK seems to imply here implies that the advanced man is not yet upon the path. But really, if you look at this carefully and you see his other use of the words advanced man or advanced human being, sometimes it does refer indeed to to those who are on the path. So one has to be judicious concerning the context. And, you know, this particular tabulation, it can take us all the way to some very high stages, even to the fourth degree, to, you know, to saviorship, even. And recognition of the divine plan and working with the divine plan with will and the illumined life and all of that and service of the one, it can take us well beyond the third degree. So those categories, disciple and initiate, which are found in the third column, they do have to be discriminated, because the response of the disciple is not necessarily the response of the initiate and vice versa, even though they in a way share the same column. So you have to understand the degree to which they can fulfill the indications which are listed in that column. The initiate, of course, much more fully fulfills what is there given. Okay. There is so much to be reckoned with in the new esoteric astrology. Well, this is, DK is pausing for kind of a summary reflection here, and certainly as we begin to understand this great science of relations from the perspective of the heavenly bodies, there's a science of relations which includes things other than the heavenly bodies, of course, but if it's astrology, it's the science of relations as the heavenly bodies are considered, whether those bodies are planetary stellar or grouped stellar or grouped stellar and so forth, galactic eventually, and grouped galactic and so forth. But, you know, it's overwhelming, really. You start to think about it and you say, how can I grasp all this? Well, at first we cannot, and eventually, as we persistently study, we can grasp more and more, maybe even grasp much of what is implied in this book, and it will just be the beginning, of course. He could not give us all. One can only imagine what he will be giving us in the astrological revelations which will come in 2025 and after, but not before 2025, as far as I am understanding what he is saying. What someone like myself is doing here is simply correlating and explaining and elaborating upon what has been given. Sometimes it may point in the direction of what will be given, but it is not a confirmation of what will be given. But if one begins to imagine what might be given, it's really astonishing, and it will help bring us closer to a true a science of living, using our astrological knowledge, and along with that necessarily our ray knowledge. People need not perhaps blunder through their lives quite so blindly as is presently the case, seeing themselves through a glass darkly. There will be a much clearer understanding of who we really are, and perhaps it will even reflect upon our previous incarnations and our progress to this point. So, repeating this, there is so much to be reckoned with in the new esoteric astrology. Prediction, yes, because the science of prediction is part of that new astrology. Interpretation from the standpoint of both personality and soul, because he's given us that, has he not? And we still don't really have the horoscope of the soul. We have the horoscope of soul influences within the personality horoscope. That's what we have. Character indications, as well as a close study of the law of rebirth, as it can be arrived at through an understanding of the influences of Cancer, namely the third and seventh rays which lead to outer manifestation, and the great yearning or desire for manifestation for service purposes coming in under Neptune. So I'm going to actually underline this and probably enlarge it a bit here, because it is so important, you know, what is included in the new esoteric astrology. Prediction? Yes. A prediction of the kinds of energies which will be available at specific times for the wise use of the individual and the group and the nation. But it will not necessarily tell us what the outcome will be. It will only tell us about the relative ease or difficulty of using those energies. Interpretation of both the clockwise life of the personality and the counterclockwise life of the soul, and the tendencies in both directions, and the kinds of harmonizations and conflicts in which they may be involved. Character indications, what are the patterns of the way we express energy? What is the structure of our psyche and of our behavior? In this we, modern astrology, even not the esoteric type, deals a lot with cliched character indications, as well as a close study of the law of rebirth. And, you know, we will have understanding about how the rising sign might even appear nine times in nine consecutive lives. I think I have that number right, or is it seven? It's either seven or nine. And how perhaps different degrees of the rising sign will work out in different types of horoscopes, and where the moon's nodes and the position of the moon may indicate past experience, and also perhaps some 12th house indicators concerning the past. Even the sun tells us something about the degree to which the energies have been integrated at this point of development. So there, you know, I don't think that one personal horoscope can be looked at and a whole trend of past lives be disclosed by that. I remember one interpreter of astrology, quite good, I think, in many ways, but thinking that we always had the same moon sign, life after life. I see no basis for that whatsoever. Just the way we don't have the same sun sign or even the same rising sign. We need a rounding out process, and I think that mutation of relation, as it is spoken of in relation to Gemini, is the rule here, and not any type of permanent fixity. One thing which will later emerge, says the Tibetan, but which is at present impossible of elucidation, is the fact that the 12 creative hierarchies are all connected with one or other of the 12 signs of the zodiac. He gives us a little bit of elucidation, doesn't he? He brings this subject up in a treatise on cosmic fire and in the compilation on page, tabulation compilation, page 34 and 35 of the Esoteric Astrology book. He gives us the signs of the zodiac which are associated with the different hierarchies, and we can begin to read between the lines as why this should be so. You know, with every one of the creative hierarchies, and I think I've gone through this, you know, why should it be that humanity is a Scorpio hierarchy? Well, this fourth kingdom, you know, ruled by the fourth ray, is a warring kingdom and is eventually supposed to work out harmony through conflict, and the sign, the fourth ray, comes mostly through Scorpio at this sign time and will give us our conflicted situations from which harmony can be induced, how we have to overcome the death of consciousness and rise up into the light of day. There are many reasons that we can look at the association of the signs with the different type of hierarchies. Capricorn, associated with the hierarchy of solar angels, the fifth is another one. The solar angels committed to the upliftment and supervised initiation of mankind, and Capricorn being the sign of initiation, and also the sign which rules various early forms, such as the crocodile, which the inverted five-pointed star, in a way the opposite of Venus, symbolizes. So there are many ways in which this number five for the fifth grade of hierarchy, and also the number 10, because Capricorn is the 10th sign, and from a certain perspective, the fifth grade of hierarchy is really the 10th. There are many correlations which can justify the association of various signs of the zodiac with, particular creative hierarchies. The position of the hierarchy, the main ray and tendency of the hierarchy compared with the main rays of the signs that are associated with them, all kinds of reasons. What may be the most essential type of reason, we don't know. We can speculate upon that. And perhaps DK will one day tell us why it is so. I mean, you know, why should Libra particularly be associated with the third creative hierarchy, or Virgo with the second of the manifested hierarchies? There are many, many hints given there, including the hints concerning the types of energy which are available, you know, Parashakti, Kriya Shakti, Jnana Shakti, Mantrika Shakti, and so forth. We look at all the factors listed in this, you know what I'm talking about here. I just go right to the page. This is the picture of the manifested creative hierarchies, and on every column there is information, numerical, comments, energy, the sign, the name, numbering, the number, numbering down, numbering up. Hints can be gathered from all of these, which tend towards the justification of the association of a particular sign with a particular hierarchy, including simply a divine order from some sort of paradigm about which we probably know very little. But there is a very clear ordering of assignments of zodiacal signs to the different hierarchies, even though there is, for the moment, an apparent disorder here in the reversal of Capricorn and Sagittarius. So DK is basically telling us he can't tell us too much about this. He cannot really elucidate this with total clarity, though maybe in his next work he will be able to do that. If the consciousness of humanity and its intelligence rises to a sufficient degree, it's the fact that the 12 creative hierarchies are all connected with one or other of the 12 signs of the zodiac, and these all definitely affect the human family and the unit in that family too. So what we're talking about is the effect of the creative hierarchies upon the human family and human unit. That's what we're talking about. And we are definitely interested in these matters. The Tibetan is said to be a great expert on the creative hierarchies, on the planetary and zodiacal energies, and so forth. And in what he has given us, we have a fascinating matrix of interrelationships. Remember, it's the light of interplay that is the light of the constellation Gemini, which the Tibetan, as the messenger, one of the chief messengers of the hierarchy, must be closely associated with. The Tibetan associated with Gemini, and interestingly enough, so many prominent in the Bailey work being associated with Gemini, namely Alice Bailey, Sun in Gemini, Foster Bailey, Gemini Rising, Mary Bailey, Sun in Gemini. There's something about that Gemini energy and what the Tibetan has given forth, and even his teacher, Master K.H., I do believe, is the Sun in Gemini, according to some papers that have been now given out, and which the Tibetan wrote for what was called at the time the Disciple's Degree. Okay, a close study of the relations indicated in this new tabulation, now almost 80 years old, right? Takes a while to assimilate things, doesn't it? Now indicated in this new tabulation, and a study also of the hierarchies and the signs, will cause a drastic revolution in modern astrology, and one of the most basic importance. Well, we really need this revolution. There are some people in the astrological field who, now widening the horizons, have begun to be interested in esoteric astrology and in the new hypotheses of esoteric astrology, but unless they also study the evolution of the soul through the personality and the evolution of the soul on its own level, they won't have the proper field to apply, to which to apply this new astrology. We can't just study esoteric astrology and apply it only to the personality level, can we? Although I'm sure there are many people who kind of do that. No, we have to have a really good understanding of the constitution of the human being and the way the different parts of that constitution evolve at different times and in relation to each other, and then we will be able to apply the new esoteric astrology in a meaningful and evolutionarily significant manner. So let's also learn the ageless wisdom while we are learning the new astrology. It's the only way it will really work. More than this I cannot here indicate, and more will not be possible until the present astrologers have the present astrologers have done some concentrated work along the lines here designated. And I dare say, you know, this being written in the mid-30s or so, the astrologers, at least the ones that I know, have done now some concentrated work along these lines. And certainly what is being now delivered in book form and in form like this and in classes and convocations and so forth demonstrates that concentrated work and therefore perhaps a certain readiness for further teaching. DK has basically said, look, if you don't use what I give you, then more cannot be given. Even though he did say that, you know, by 2025 and after, new information on astrology would be given as he continues his third installment in this series of, what did he call them, bridging treatises, something like that. So maybe he assumed that we would have done the concentrated work necessary by the time 2025 occurred, and hopefully we have. I personally think there's so much to assimilate here that we have not yet assimilated. We could have quite a number more years working simply on what has been given and on the implications of what has been given. But if he chooses in 2025 and afterward to expand the offering, then that's great. And may we be equal to that revelation and assimilate it and apply it in a constructive manner. All right. So, simple as it sounds when stated, the most fundamental point for astrologers to grasp today is the need for them to know, prior to interpretation, where upon the path of evolution the subject under consideration stands. Oh, well, that's it. And a lot of experience with human nature and with one's own human nature will be required if a person is able to just size this up, you know, just understand where, really, the subject under consideration actually stands. There are hints being given all the time, and in different books, DK gives some kinds of epitomes, some sort of essentialization about the stages of evolution. You know, I'm not sure that I can find this immediately, but in Esoteric Psychology 2, there is, maybe if I look at World, Flesh, Devil. Right here, yeah, well, I turned right to it. Lucky day. But here in Esoteric Psychology, page 77, we're talking about the stage of appropriation, and we're talking about heading in two directions, one rather involutionary, the other evolutionary. We have 33 phases. 33, of course, is interesting because it tells us something about the number of achievement, you know, the Christ, well, Master Jesus, is said to have lived to be 33 years old, and 33 has important significance in relation to the vertebrae, and it has significance in terms of release, of completing a necessary process. Here we have up to number 16. The developing personality, which is really somewhat involutionary, it's not yet spiritual, and it ends with the world, the flesh, and the devil, and then we move on to the side of soul expression, which is governed by detachment, and the following phrases and sentences will give an idea, and it is progressive, you see, it is progressive, and goes on until we reach the stage of liberation, reality, formlessness, and God. So if you study those 33 stages, the first 16 of which are stages which fortify the personality and do not necessarily lead into the soul experience, and the next 17 stages being those which are characteristic of evolution into soul experience, we will understand something here about the path of evolution and where the subject really stands. I mean, you know, some people really are at the stage of reality, formlessness, God. But others are waking up, the return of the prodigal son to the father's home. Others are beginning to deal with the understanding of selflessness instead of selfishness. And others are in the process here of liberating themselves from the body or bodies, a sheath or sheaths, a vehicle or vehicles, a form or forms, are turning away from form life. But if we went back further, you know, we'd see people building up their personalities. We might see them trying loving possessions, being acquisitive. We might see them entering the phase of riotous living. On the part of the prodigal son. And or we might see them directing their personality forward selfishly through ambition here, point 12. Their attachment growing, the stage in which they apply deliberate selfishness, and they become very much of the kingdom of the earth, and finally are very much externalizations or representations of the world, the flesh, and the devil. You know how it is when you're using the Alice Baby CD-ROM. If you have at least the slightest memory of a couple of words that occurred in the section that you want to reference, you put those words in and hopefully it will lead you where you want to go. So given these 33 phases, they're not necessarily perfectly sequential or understandably sequential, but given them, we should be able to somewhat tell where our subject, our astrological client may be working. And of course there are other areas of the teaching where he does seem to develop the whole process sequentially. Just study the techniques of integration. It's an earlier stage than the technique of fusion. You'll get some idea of where the aspirant disciple is working. Or study the unfoldment of the nine first petals of the egoic lotus. And each one of those tells us something very specific about a stage of evolution. So that if you gather where the individual is focus within the petals, you can relate it to these 16 stages, or you can, I think there are 8 stages of adaptation. I think here in esoteric psychology, let's look here around page 206, or, yeah, right in there. Here it is. This is telling us about the different types of lotuses that people are. It's not a perfect continuum, but a lotus of revelation is the third degree initiate, and a lotus in bud is one that has just individualized, and between them there are these different stages, not all of them mentioned. This is occurring in a section, a section here in which we are. Yeah, the first three, perhaps. Okay, here it is. Under point 6 on page 203. What is before point 6 is also important, but here in point 6, we are given 10 different types of souls all the way from those who live. They're walking the earth, they have vitality, but their consciousness is asleep, and these are dormant human beings. And this goes all the way up to the souls who have achieved release from all limitations of the form nature, the masters of the wisdom. Here are 10 phases out from page 203 to 208, where if you wonder where your client may be focused, consult these 10 phases. They're also given somewhere here, 8 stages of adaptation. Stages. Let's see if I get lucky here. I'm not so lucky at this time. But there are those, you can find the 8 stages of adaptation. And it's not right here. Let's see. If I would only remember. Maybe 360 something of Esoteric Psychology 1. I don't know. We'll see if we can make just a little attempt here. No. This is Esoteric Psychology 1. And let's just see if we can get anywhere near there. Maybe not. But if you look for the stages of adaptation, you will find a similar list to the stages of soul unfoldment, and it will enrich the list of stages through which humanity passes. So the early 200s, around 203, 204 of Esoteric Psychology 2, and I think the stages of adaptation are in Esoteric Psychology 1. I still am a little persistent. Now there's going to be a lot of words adaptation, but let's just see. 2, 3, 4, 5. Aha! I became lucky. It was not 360. It was page 322. So these are the stages of adaptation through which the individual passes, all the way from number 1, the unconscious adaptation to his environment of the man who is pretty much the unintelligent animal, all the way through stage 8. This scale of adaptation is that of the higher initiates, the perfected elder brothers, and the great companions. There it is, okay, page 323. So given that list in Esoteric Psychology 1 of those 33 different stages, descending and ascending, and given the stages of unfoldment in Esoteric Psychology 2 again, around page 203 and following, and then given these stages of adaptation around page 323, and maybe a little before that, and following, and then given the stages of unfoldment of the egoic lotus, somewhere around page 537 or 540 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, and around page 820 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, you should have enough. You should have enough to help you place the individual, not rigidly, but loosely, who may come to you for assistance. And you'll be able somewhat to place yourself as well, to see what the unfoldments really are, which lie immediately ahead, and to see what your obstacles are and what you must work upon and what you must conquer in order to fulfill the promise of your particular incarnation. All right, well, that was a bit of an elaboration on this point. Simple as it sounds, he says, when stated, the most fundamental point for astrologers to grasp today is the need for them to know, prior to interpretation, where upon the path of evolution the subject under consideration stands. I mean, you know, we're not doing charts in most cases for fourth degree initiates. We're not doing charts even in most cases for third degree initiates. Our entire method of interpretation would have to alter if we did. But before that point, we are liable to meet all kinds of people, including people who have not yet really stepped upon the path and are more on the path of probation and aspiration. And of course, we will also meet many concentrated, fairly selfish, assertive personalities who are living through those 3, 7, or 11 lives where their personality prowess, considered in a quite individualistic sense, is the main thing for them. So this has to be understood. Okay, well, I've gone on a bit here, and what I'm going to do is to say that this is the end of Esoteric Astrology, Adventure 99A. Whoops. No. How about that? A, and it's page what? 335. Didn't make a whole lot of progress there, in a way. Page 335. Okay, good. Now, so, beginning Esoteric Astrology Adventure 99, B, page 335, and